Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. I'm your host, Boris Chassaing. I'll be with you for the next half hour. Most of today's show will be dedicated to the National Indigenous Peoples Day. We'll travel from one end of the country to the other. And as we celebrate National Indigenous Peoples Day, Mi'kmaq leaders and top advisor quit the New Brunswick Systemic Racism Commission.
We were skeptical of the process. We'd asked for an inquiry, into the justice system in New Brunswick from the get-go.
A new transitional housing project opened its doors in Kingston, Ontario.
We're able to house 19 homeless Indigenous community members. So that's pretty big when you consider the amount of people who are homeless.
We'll also go to Halifax, where a 19-foot canoe is on display at the Halifax Airport.
And that is made very much, that canoe, in the traditional Mi'kmaq way they've been making for thousands of years.
And another exhibit has opened at the Alberta Aviation Museum, featuring Indigenous youth artists.
We've collaborated with the Alberta Aviation Museum to present Indigenous perspectives on flight. And here, when you arrive, you'll be able to see students' artwork depicting the 12 moon cycles from an Indigenous perspective.
We'll conclude this edition of Viewpoints with our BC journalist, Surjit Atwal. He has been honored with the Queen's Platinum Jubilee Medallion.
I literally fell from my chair. It still took me about a week to process what that meant.
Welcome to Viewpoints.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. And get all our stories on canada-info.ca.
With the summer solstice, we not only celebrate the official launch of summer, but as you probably noticed over the past few days, Indigenous culture and history with National Indigenous Peoples Day. In Kingston, Ontario, a new transitional housing project opened its doors to Kingston's Indigenous community. The new TP Moza Transitional Housing Project will house 19 Indigenous community members. TP Moza has offered housing for those experiencing homelessness for close to 30 years in the Kingston area. That's going to give them a safe place to call home, food security, and a chance to get back on the right path, says Winnie Peters, the executive director of TP Moza, who's with Karim Mosna, our journalist based in Kingston, Ontario.
Today, the grand opening of this transitional housing unit. Tell me a little bit more about your hopes for what this project is going to bring to the community.
So, as we all know, homelessness has become a real concern, especially, in the city of Kingston. So the transitional housing, once we're at full occupancy, which we're almost at full occupancy, we're able to house 19 homeless Indigenous community members. So that's pretty big when you consider the amount of people who are homeless. That's going to alleviate a lot of stress off of them. It's going to give them a safe place to call home, food security, and, the chance to get back on the right path.
And that certainly is a challenge for so many, is sometimes having that sense. Will there be a sense of support and help available through this as well?
Absolutely. So a lot of the a lot of people who struggle with homelessness have mental health and addictions. So we have support workers on staff that work with the clients on a daily basis. We've just opened two months ago, and we are in the midst of trying to get more programming going, culturally appropriate. So it could be anything from, learning languages to beading and crafting and arts. We have the Kingston Literacy who are come in as well. So there's quite a bit of programming that we're going to be starting.
And as you kind of hinted there, there will be still a way to still feel connected to their culture through these programs and through living with TP Moza.
Absolutely. That's part of the healing journey, is to be able to, some just need to either reconnect or connect to their culture. So we believe our programming will provide that.
And how is this all funded?
Actually, there is so many community partners that have come forward. I can't name them all because I will forget some, but there's probably about 8 different community partners that have come to help set up and celebrate today.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
And we shift our attention to New Brunswick, where Mi'kmaq leaders and top advisor quit the New Brunswick Systemic Racism Commission. Robert T. Burrow, senior advisor to Commissioner Manju Varma, published his resignation letter on Twitter, saying he felt troubled these last few weeks by the false pretenses under which we're expected to do our work. He adds that it remains unclear whether the provincial government can respect the commissioner's independence or intends to accept her recommendations in good faith. Indigenous groups have criticized the Tory-appointed commission, calling instead for a public inquiry, which would have the power to compel the government to produce information. We were skeptical of the process. We'd ask for an inquiry into the justice system in New Brunswick from the get-go, said Chief George Ganish of the Natuganeg or Eel Ground First Nation. Minister of Aboriginal Affairs Arlene Dunn downplayed the level of division between Indigenous communities and the province this week. Ganish spoke to her journalist David Gordon Kosh about the tense relationship between the provincial government and First Nations in New Brunswick.
MTI, a group that brings together 9 Mi'kmaq communities in New Brunswick, announced this week they would no longer participate in a commission on systemic racism led by government-appointed Commissioner Manju Varma. MTI, which includes Fort Folly First Nation, also released a report that had previously been prepared by the commissioner, saying the document had been suppressed. It includes 5 recommendations, starting with a public inquiry into systemic racism against Indigenous people in the justice system and policing system in New Brunswick. Indigenous leaders have been calling for that kind of inquiry for 2 years following 3 tragic events that deeply affected First Nations people in this province. First, there was the hit-and-run death of Brady Francis, a 22-year-old man from Elsapugtug First Nation. The man accused of striking down Francis was acquitted in a controversial trial, prompting outrage among community members. Later that year, 2 Indigenous people, Chantel Moore of Tlaukiat First Nation and Rodney Levi of Metapanagiag First Nation, were shot and killed by police in 2 separate incidents. Premier Blaine Higgs has resisted calls for a public inquiry, saying past reviews have already produced enough recommendations that haven't been carried out. The province has also said the matters in question are in the federal domain. Last September, the province announced that Manju Varma would serve as an independent commissioner on systemic racism, while Stokie Nation chiefs have called the commission an ineffective alternative to an inquiry, saying they wouldn't participate in the commissioner's work. Her final report is expected later this year. But in April, she produced a midterm report that called for government to launch, without delay, an Indigenous-led, co-managed public inquiry into systemic racism against Indigenous peoples in New Brunswick's criminal justice and policing sectors. MTI received a copy of that report, which the commissioner planned to release publicly. Those plans changed after a meeting between the commissioner and government officials, including the Premier and Minister of Aboriginal Affairs, Arlene Dunn. On Tuesday, CHMA spoke to Chief George Ganish, who is co-chair of MTI.
We were very concerned that the interim report had been shared with government, and government were not supportive, and were quite concerned that if we had waited till September, what might have been released then would be a shadow of what was shared with us. We were skeptical of the process. We'd asked for an inquiry, into the justice system in New Brunswick from the get-go. And, that's based on, our historical relationship with the criminal justice system, our overrepresentation on the other side of the docket. So, we were really skeptical but we said, well, we'll participate. We'll see if in fact, something will be, generated that might actually, sway the government to see that this is absolutely necessary. So for us to hear that, the commissioner had changed her mind about the mid-process release, that greatly, greatly troubles us.
Aboriginal Affairs Minister Arlene Dunn spoke to reporters in a virtual media conference earlier this week. She denied that anyone from the provincial government had asked the commissioner to shelve the report, and she said the commissioner hadn't received necessary information from various government departments, and an interim report was never part of the commissioner's mandate.
There was no discussion with respect to, number one, an interim report. And secondly, no one asked her to shelve anything. And as I said earlier, the expectation was for a fulsome and comprehensive report to be produced in the fall. So in terms of a recommendation, I guess it was alarming from my perspective when I asked the question about some of the work that's being done within the respective departments around policing. And she wasn't aware of those things. And I said, well, you know, in all due respect, Commissioner, I think it's very important that you understand what's happening with respect to policing, with regards to public safety as it pertains to Indigenous people in this province. And she said, well, you know, I can only report on the information that I'm receiving from the respective departments.
But Ganesh says he believes the government is interfering with a commission that's supposed to be independent. On Tuesday, Indigenous Peoples Day, Premier Higgs and Minister Dunn released a statement saying our government is committed, together with First Nations leadership, to continuing the work on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls for action. The government has also launched a website to provide updates on those calls for action, saying it's making progress in several areas. Examples include agreements between the Department of Education and First Nations in curriculum development on the history of residential schools. But Ganesh says relations with the provincial government are extremely poor.
I mean, there's a real reluctance to acknowledge that we have a treaty relationship. There are laws, there are treaties. You know, there's a requirement to consult our people, you know, when our rights are impacted. And this government continues to try to sidestep that responsibility.
We now go to Nova Scotia, where Indigenous communities were also celebrating the National People's Day on June 21st. The Halifax International Airport Authority partnered with Canoe 22 and the 2023 North American Indigenous Games and installed a 19-foot Mi'kmaq canoe that will be on display all summer. The 19-foot canoe was built by Todd and Melissa Labrador in 2019. The Mi'kmaq regularly traveled great distances along the water ways of the Maritimes and the dependent on the canoes built by skilled artisans for transportation. In honor of this day of celebrations, drums were played and prayers were said. The ceremony included a prayer and smudging of the canoe by Darlene Gilbert. And Halifax, our journalist Sarah Gouda met with Darlene Gilbert, whose spirit name is Thunderbird Sweeping Down Woman. She is a Mi'kmaq grandmother and elder from the Annapolis Valley First Nations.
In honor of today being Indigenous Peoples Day, and before guest speakers at the ceremony were announced, some drums were played and prayers were said. We speak with Darlene Gilbert, whose spirit name is Thunderbird Swooping Down Woman. She is the Mi'kmaq grassroots grandmother from Annapolis Valley First Nations. She's a traditional water protector, and she was responsible for the smudging and water ceremony to bless the canoe here today in the airport.
My name is Thunderbird Swooping Down Woman. My colonial name is Darlene Gilbert. My position is a grandmother, an elder.
Can you tell us what today is National Indigenous Day?
Yes.
Can you tell us what today means to you?
It means recognition. Finally, there's some recognition to come forth. This is actually supposed to be a national, turn into a national holiday, as I understand. So we're just still waiting for that to be implemented, and hopefully that will be for next year when our Indigenous games start opening. I came to do ceremony on the canoe that Todd Labrador and his wife made for the Indigenous games, to bless it, to wish it safe travels while it's here in Mi'kma'ki, to help represent, you know, the community of Mi'kmaq, to welcome the outside community into here.
Can you
you tell us, can you educate us a little bit about the prayer you made? What is the little red bag that you tied around the canoe?
Oh, that's a prayer tie. A prayer tie of tobacco. So tobacco is our most common medicine that everybody can use, like women on their moon time.
Is this also tobacco?
No, that's sweetgrass, cedar, and sage. And there is some tobacco in there. I put all four medicines in to smudge the boat. But tobacco is one of our medicines that everybody can use. Like, you know, when you go on, and if you have a hard time, you know, and you don't have any sage, but you have tobacco, you go take that tobacco and you pray and you lay it on to Mother Earth and your prayers go up. That's why we say tobacco down, prayers up, right? It's a form of, you know, our spirituality, showing our spirituality.
She then explains what it means to be a traditional water protector.
I'm one of the grandmothers that was involved with the Alton Gas. And I became a water protector when I went on front lines and stood for my lands to protect the rivers. So we protect the rivers. We try to watch over our rivers to protect them so that, you know, environmental issues that is happening now, maybe we can stop them, make them look at their ways that they're affecting Mother Earth and our waters, because water is life. I wasn't expecting this. But I am very honored to be here with these people, and I'm looking forward to the games next year.
Speaking of the games next year, what can the people of Halifax expect? What kind of events are going to be on display, and how many participants usually partake in these events?
So my name is Fiona Kirkpatrick Parsons. I'm the chair of the 2023 North American Indigenous Games. It is absolutely huge. There's going to be almost 5,300 young people. There'll be 16 sports, 20 venues. Also in Millbrook First Nation, we'll be hosting one of the events as well. And so it's going to be just massive and exciting, as well as cultural. There'll be a cultural village down on the Halifax Common where everybody can enjoy, as well as other cultural experiences along the waterfront. So, and all the events are free. The only things that will be ticketed will be the opening and closing ceremonies, and those will be at the Scotiabank Centre.
And I noticed that your logo is a canoe, as you mentioned. Can you just tell me a little bit about the process of discussing and designing this canoe for the games?
Well, really, we spoke with, and as it happens, the Labrador family are very involved with canoe making. So Melissa Labrador and her dad, Todd, who was the master canoe builder, built the actual canoe. Melissa designed the logo, so it's authentic. You know, the logo itself reflects the style of canoe. And that is made very much, that canoe, in the traditional Mi'kmaq way they've been making for thousands of years. I think there's only one thing, is that the sealant is more modern than the sealant that they would normally use, which is a type of sap, because it's accessible. But other than that, I don't think there's a nail in that canoe.
You're on the air with Viewpoints. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
New exhibit Hey Ah Me Ayaka, We're All Flying Together, is now on display at the Alberta Aviation Museum. The museum has partnered up with Amiskwasi Academy to showcase the new exhibit that opened on June 11th. Ryan Lee, curator at the Aviation Museum, says he was honored to help present the hard work of the young artists who put the exhibit together. Charlie Allard is one of them. She says she was feeling pretty good about everyone seeing her artwork on the exhibit. Amiskwasi Academy teacher Stéphine Sakab shares with journalist Daniel Barker-Tremblay what visitors can expect when they check out the 12 art pieces on display.
Eh, pame hayak. In Cree, it means we are all flying together, a well-suited name for the new art display in the Alberta Aviation Museum. Stéphine Sakab, teacher at the Amiskwasi Academy Edmonton Public School, talks about what visitors can expect when they see the new display inside the museum.
So we have a very exciting art installation that we've collaborated with the Alberta Aviation Museum to present Indigenous perspectives on flight. And here, when you arrive, you'll be able to see students' artwork depicting the 12 moon cycles from an Indigenous perspective. We decided to choose this because it has lots of birds in the name. And as a result of that, we thought it would be a perfect tie-in for flight. So when you come in, you'll get to see mixed media paintings involving acrylic on canvas, as well as beadwork stitched into the canvas to highlight the type of moon it is. In addition to that, there's also QR codes with the paintings, so you'll be able to actually hear the name of the canvas in Cree and get to practice and learn, you know, alongside the installation.
Ryan Lee, curator at the Alberta Aviation Museum, says it means a lot to him and says he is honored to amplify the artists who put the exhibit together.
It means a lot to me. Coming out of COVID, this project has been a work that's been long coming, and I'm so happy that we were able to pull it off and the students and teachers at Miskwichi were able to get it together. And for me, it's, as a history museum, we're often looking backwards. We're looking to the past, which is very important. We want to honor those that came before us, but and how they paved the way for everybody that is here today. So for me, I'm really wanting to amplify people that are working today and highlight current events and what they're working towards. And so I'm really honored to be able to have people, have a venue that we can amplify the artists that were able to put this together.
One of the young artists that has her art on display is Charlie Allard. A student from a Miskwichi Academy says that it feels pretty good for everyone to see her hard work on display.
It feels pretty good. It feels cool knowing that tons of people will see it and stuff.
I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay.
Our CIVL-FM journalist, Sergit Atwal, is among the Abbotsford residents who received a Queen's Platinum Jubilee Medallion presented by Member of Parliament Ed Fast for tireless service to our community and country. Atwal has volunteered with CIVL Community Radio in British Columbia for nearly a decade. Since 2021, he has been employed as a regular newscaster and radio show host and posted his stories at canada-info.ca as part of the Local Journalism Initiative, supported by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Last fall, Sergit's work was highlighted in CIVL's winning Campus Station of the Year nomination, awarded by Broadcast Dialogue. This week's recognition underscores his impact. So, Sergit Atwal, nice to meet you. Welcome to Viewpoints and congrats on your award, the Queen's Platinum Jubilee Medallion. That's quite an honor. How do you feel?
Thank you, sir. A little overwhelmed still. When I received it, I got a notification about 3 weeks ago from my local member of parliament, who I've interviewed quite a bit because he's my local MP. He used to be the Minister of Trade in Stephen Harper's government at Fast. So I got an email just out of the blue one day. I didn't even know someone had nominated me. So it was you're going to receive this medal. And then I was interviewing a local MLA from my town at that very same moment when I got that email. And I literally fell from my chair. Still took me about a week to process what that meant. So yeah, still a little overwhelmed.
Many other residents also received a Queen's Platinum Jubilee Medallion. They all come from different backgrounds. So why you? We all know you do great work on radio. So why did the jury decide that you needed to get that medal?
Well, I worked in the provincial government for 5 years. You know, I was the executive assistant and the community outreach coordinator and the communications guy for the Speaker of the Legislature, Darrell Pleckis, here in British Columbia. So I had the government background and the government knowledge, but I also have a story that people that know me know that story. I was born with a disability. I was born with cerebral palsy, and doctors had told my parents that I would never walk or talk or do anything productive in society. And I, in the last 10 years, I've got a BA degree, got a master's degree, start working in government and now do this radio thing, you know, and it's those accomplishments that I think that are setting examples for other disabled people that they wanted to highlight.
Sergeant, you've been working in radio, I think, for some nearly 10 years. Why do you love radio so much? You've been working at CIVL and with the local journalism initiative also. How is radio different from other media in your view?
Radio gives you a more personal look at the person. Like you can directly, you can have a conversation even off or on air. And it's more emotionally connected with the person. So, you know, you can read their eyes. You can do whatever. You can see if they're telling you the truth. It's more a comfortable medium for people. And it was the very start of radio broadcasting that I started as a child. I've always been comfortable with the radio. I have a passion in politics, but I also have a passion for journalism. So this now gives me a happy medium where I can combine both of my passions and produce something for my listeners that can educate them.
So when you first went on air, how did you feel?
Very nervous.
As we all did, huh?
I did my very first live interview. Like, when I first went on air and the light went on and you were on air, I literally froze. And Aaron Levy was a very good friend of mine, but also the station manager here at Civil, had to run into the studio and just fill the dead air. You know, it was dead air for about 45 seconds. No, now you talk. But once you get used to it, you get used to it. You know, a couple of weeks later, I just realized I'm actually just doing the talking, and then I don't actually get to see those people, you know. They get to hear me, but I don't see how many people are listening to me. That was a comforting thing. So I'm just talking to a studio, you know.
So what kind of feedback do you get from the audience then?
Oh, they love it. They totally love it. I try to give a little bit of everything. So if they're interested in Canadian politics, they can find something on Canadian politics. If they're interested in local politics, they can find something. The Russia thing was a big thing for a while. So we live in an area that's known as the Mennonite Belt. So, you know, and they mostly came from Russia and the Ukraine. So they wanted to hear about this. So we had to do special programming just to focus on that
area. Of course. So what now, Sergeant? What are your plans, projects for the next few weeks or months?
Starting to interview federal leaders in the next few weeks. Like, I have an interview with Jean Charest. I don't know if that's the way you pronounce it.
Yeah,
you know,
we understand it well in French.
he was the premier of your guys' province. So
yes.
Quebec, you know, and Pierre Poilievre and Patrick Brown, and eventually in the next few weeks, hopefully the Prime Minister of Canada. So I'm starting to go federally.
Well, Sergeant, it was great to have you with us. This is all the time we have. It was really great to have you with us for this first time on Viewpoints and Viewpoints Radio Show. And congrats again on being awarded the Queen's Platinum Jubilee Medallion.
Thank you so much, sir. And thank you for taking the time. And I hope I'll have you on one day.
Well, thanks a lot, Sergeant. Okay, take care. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's it for us at Viewpoints. Thanks to our journalists David Gordon-Kosh, Karim Mosna, Sarah Gouda, Sergeant Atwal, and David Barker-Tremblay. National Coordinator Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in Ottawa. I'm Boris Chassagne, your host and producer. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI and tune in to all our stories at canada-info.ca. Thanks for being with us. Goodbye.